Well, as you know, we have begun the study of the book of Ecclesiastes. And as I mentioned, we're handling this so a little bit differently than we do some book studies, in that we're not dealing with so many cross-references on verse by verse as much as we are dealing with topics that are covered. Ecclesiastes chapter 2 is a chapter that should be studied in its entirety, and so that's what we propose to do today, is to study this. And I want you to look with me in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 3 as we begin the study. And then what we're going to do is we're going to walk through this passage of Scripture with the thought from verse 3 in mind. Verse 3, I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. Now, you see that in verse 3? Here's what Solomon is attempting to learn by his experiment. In the middle of verse 3, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. Ecclesiastes 2:3. So what Solomon is going to do, and you can see it also here in verse 3, is he is going to literally examine everything that men do under the heaven. We're not talking about eternal values here. We're talking about worldly matters. We're not talking about God and his influences in the affairs of men, although he's going to conclude with that. We're not talking about the devil and his influences. We're not talking about spiritual matters and influences out. We're simply talking about somebody is born here, they wake up, realize they're going to have to live in this earth, and then they start pursuing things. And Solomon said, I'm going to give it all a try. And I'm going to see what was that good for the sons of men which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. That's what he's checking out, okay? So this is what Solomon said, I'm going to pursue. And notice in verse 3, at the beginning he said, I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, watch it, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom. In other words, he's not just going to become a lush. Okay, he's going to know what it is to get drunk. He's going to write about that. But he's not going to be a lush where that's all he does till he ends up in the grave with cirrhosis of the liver or whatever. He said, I'm acquainting my heart with wisdom. In other words, I'm going to try all this out and see what was that good. What was that good for the sons of men which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life? That's what he's going to pursue. All right, so this is what he's doing. This is his experiment. Now, what he writes here is going to take you through that process of time. In other words, he's going to write and tell you, this is what I did, this is what I did, this is what I did. And then he's going to be now later in life looking back on it and tell you, here's what I think about it after doing it all. Okay? So that's what you're going to do in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 with me this morning. Verse 1, I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? All right, so the first thing that Solomon puts in his list that he experimented with that a man can do was pleasure. He tried pleasure. He said, I said in my heart, go to now approve thee with mirth, M-I-R-T-H, mirth. Mirth is social merriment, hilarity. It's high excitement of pleasurable feelings in company. All right, so you might imagine a stadium full of people at a sporting event. Okay, high excitement of pleasurable feelings in company. I think one fella came from another country to see American football. They didn't have American football in his country. And he said, I've never seen so much excitement over something so meaningless in all of my life. All right? It's noisy gaiety. Merriment is noisy gaiety. I can remember walking with Ann in a rainforest in Costa Rica. We were in a little bitty village in that rainforest. And we heard, hooping and hollering and carrying on going on. And I told Ann, I said, man, they are wound up in the cantina tonight. We turned the corner and it was a church. Mirth differs from cheerfulness in that it always implies noise, a noisy high experience. And so you'll read in the Bible, for instance, in Jeremiah chapter 7 as an example, the voice of mirth, just noisy, high excitement. So if you watch game shows on TV, they got a crowd full of people and they're yelling, screaming and carrying on and getting all excited about something. Okay? So that's mirth. All of that is mirth. All right? And then he says, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. Pleasure. Now, pleasure, that's what's going on today. Men shall be lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Pleasure is the gratification of the senses or gratification of the mind. So you want to watch a good movie or read a good book. Or eat a good steak, or drive a fast car, anything that gratifies the senses, or smell a good aroma, agreeable sensations, agreeable emotions. Pleasure is often derived from the indulgence of your appetite. So you go to lunch today, you're not going to eat enough just to nourish your body. You're going to eat enough to get stuffed and go home and take a big nap. And say, wow, wasn't that great meal? All right, or sometimes it's the pleasure from the view of beauty. People love to go to museums and they like to view artwork, or they like to go on tours with these tour companies so they can see ancient buildings and ruins and things like that. That's pleasure. Or they derive pleasure from the harmony of sounds. They like to go to the symphony, or they want to go to a rock concert or something like that. Or from agreeable society, they love to go to a party. Or from the expectation of seeing a friend, you know that you're going to have some company, and there's pleasure in that. Or from the prospect of gain, from success of any kind, like closing a big business deal or a real estate transaction or something like that. All of those things would fall under the category of pleasure. And these don't have to be sinful pleasures. These are just things that you do, like catching a big fish or taking a picture with a trophy buck you shot, which is kind of interesting because he was 75 yards away from you, gorging on corn. And had no idea you were there, and you shot him with a 300 Win Mag, like there was any chance at all. But there you are with your big smile and the big set of horns. There's no sin in that, you know. You want to make sure you do something with the meat. All right, and then laughter, he said, I said of laughter, that's verse 2. You know, laughter, so anything that tickles you. Well, I'm telling you, there's comedy shows, there are sitcoms, there are funny things that people email you, funny things that you see in little videos, the world's funniest home videos, blah, blah, blah. And Solomon said after experiencing all of laughter, you know what he said? It's mad. In the sense that people are seeking laughter because they are infatuated with folly. Notice he talks about folly in verse 3. In the middle he says, and to lay hold on folly. What is folly? Well, they even had something called the Follies. Remember all those silly shows? Okay. It's in the sense that people are seeking laughter or folly. It's an act. Folly is an act which is inconsistent with the dictates of reason or with the ordinary rules of prudence. In other words, it's foolishness. It's just going outside of... So the dictate of reason would say, if you're somebody that would have a glass of wine, for instance, go have a glass of wine, but don't drink the bottle and then drive home drunk. That's folly, okay? All right, and of course, there'd be a lot of laughter associated with that. If you've ever been in anywhere where people are intoxicated, then you hear the cackling of laughter, and then in the morning, nobody can remember what they were laughing about. All right, so you know what he found when he did all this? He found that pleasure is vanity, verse 1. Laughter is mad. And he said of mirth in verse 2, what doeth it? So after I've had all the folly, all the pleasure, all the laughter, all the fun that I could possibly have, what do I have when I'm done? Nothing. The need to have more. So he said, I tried all that, and it didn't accomplish anything. Pleasure is temporary, and pleasure is not only temporary, but when it's done, it leaves you with nothing. Maybe a story to tell. Like, for instance, that story I told you. Remember Three Dog Night? Many of you are old enough to remember Three Dog Night. And they played their concerts 50 years ago. And so my brother has some friends that went to the concert. And they asked him if he wanted to go. He said, I don't care to go. I mean, they came back. 50 years later, they came back to Corpus Christi to play. And I don't want to go to that. So the next day they came, and he asked him, well, so how was the concert? He said, well, remember 50 years ago when we were in the concert? Remember what the smell was in the concert hall? Remember the smell of marijuana? He said, well, we went there last night for the concert, and you know what the smell was? Ben Gay. That's pleasure. All right, in verse 3, in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 3, here's the next thing he tried. Tried wine. I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine. Watch it. Yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom. In other words, this is a sincere experiment. He's going to get drunk. He's going to try different kinds of wine and liquor and so forth. But it's to see what it's like, not to become a lush. Okay. And to lay hold on folly till I might see what was that good for the sons of men which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. Well, he learned a great deal about wine, and he recorded it for us. Look in Proverbs chapter 20. Proverbs chapter 20. Now, this is not all the Bible has to say about this intoxicating liquor. It's just this is what he learned. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1. Here's what he said. Wine is a mocker, and strong drink is raging. Whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Well, here's what he said. You're going to drink a little of it until it's got you. And then it's going to mock you. Have you ever seen a drunk? And it's going to, and strong drink is raging. What it does against you. Again, the commercials for alcohol are all, they're all mirth and pleasure. When you see them on television, they don't show you what the liver looks like. Ann's father died at 53 years old from cirrhosis of the liver. And I'm going to tell you what this is like. He died 3 weeks after Corinne, our oldest daughter, was born. So he came to Victoria when Corinne was born. He and I were having breakfast together. And while we were having breakfast, I smelled something at the table that I had never smelled before. And it was absolutely abhorrent. I could hardly eat my meal. And it was coming from his breath. And what was happening is he was dying from the inside out. And what I was smelling was the death of his insides. As soon as he left, he went back. He turned yellow as almost, Lupe, almost as yellow as your beautiful blouse this morning. Jaundiced. And ended up, it was a horrible death. They didn't tell him about that. That wasn't in the Bacardi commercial. I remember one time the photographer, we'll move on because you guys haven't struggling with this, but somebody may listen to this and need to hear this message. Grady was his name, was the photographer for the local newspaper in Beeville, the Beeville Bee-Picayune. And one morning he and I were having coffee together, and there'd been a terrible fatality on the highway the night before coming south of Pettus. Lady lost control of her car. She was drunk. And he was taking pictures of the scene for the police department. And he showed me a picture. And the picture was not of the death. The mother died. The child that was in the child restraint in the back seat, the car impact was so violent, it broke the seatbelt, the what do you call that thing, the car seat the baby was in, flew through the windshield, and the baby's dead on the road in the car seat. Violent death. And so she had a sunroof. So he took a picture through the sunroof as he's capturing all the scene. And when he went to, this was back in the day when you didn't have digital photography, he was in the dark room developing that night. He came and showed me the next morning. And there between the two bucket seats in the front of her little sedan was an empty bottle of Bacardi rum with the label up. And he said, I'm thinking about sending this to Bacardi. I think they ought to see this. Amen. Drops of blood on the label. That's what this does. That's Solomon said, this is what I learned. All right, Proverbs chapter 23, he said, I'll tell you something else I learned about it. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 29. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? Of some of you in your former life. Maybe I should say some of us in our former life. They that tarry long at the wine, that they go to seek mixed wine. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth his color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or as he that lieth upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, shalt thou say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. People used to wake up with a hangover and say, did anybody get the license plate of that truck that hit me? Yeah. And the funny thing is, as soon as it wears off, you go back to get some more. But that's the way it works. And he said, I tried that. And he said, that didn't work. that didn't work. And he did. His heart retained his wisdom enough to be able to tell us, well, that's not the way that that's not good for the sons of men. So he still keeps looking. Tried pleasure, tried wine. Then he tried doing great works. Look in verses 4-6. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. And I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees, so he could irrigate it. This is before we had sprinkler systems. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. So he's going to continue on. We'll continue on with this thought. But so he's doing all this. What did he do? He accomplished all the things that men do to find satisfaction in their worldly achievements. That's what he did. He tried architecture, construction, horticulture, agriculture, and husbandry. Those are the ones that he mentioned here. If you want to see anything that would be a minuscule representation of what Solomon was able to accomplish, go to Asheville, North Carolina, and visit the Biltmore Mansion. Some of you are nodding your head. You've been there. I've been there. George Vanderbilt built that mansion, and it was to be a self-sustaining estate with trees and with fruit and with vegetables. So he had all of this that we're talking about here. Architecture, construction, horticulture, agriculture, husbandry, pleasure. He had an indoor swimming pool, indoor, a bowling alley. You know, had all of that. And it's still there. You can tour it. You can buy tickets, pay a lot of money, and go see it. That is, on a small scale, what Solomon accomplished on a grand scale when he did this work. So he tried that. Now, he's going to comment on it here in just a minute, but let me just say that there's nothing that people are doing today that he didn't try when it came to doing something great. He didn't build rockets like Elon Musk is building today, but you get it. It still involves construction, and it still involves design. It still involves doing something great. Well, he tried that. And that's what he called it. Verse 4, he said, I made me great works. All right, so he tried that. He also tried in verses 7 through 9, accumulating possessions. Look at verse 7. I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. Also, I had great possessions of great and small cattle. Most people that raise cattle prefer a breed. You know, they say, oh, we want this breed or that breed. And I don't want to start naming breeds of cattle because they're more than I can name. But they kind of specialize in something. But he said, I got all kinds of great cattle and I got all kinds of small cattle. So he had a big herd above, look at this, above all that were in Jerusalem before me. So nobody had a ranching enterprise to rival what he had put together. Verse 8, I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings. You can go back and read what his ships went out to get, but they got ivory and they got peacocks and they got algum trees and just all kinds of anything that was a real peculiar treasure in a country. He sent merchants to get it and bring it to his country. And of the provinces, I got me in the middle of verse 8, singers and women singers, men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So he had a choir, he had an orchestra, and any time he wanted, he could be privately entertained with the music or entertain his guests, which is quite it's phenomenal what he had. And so he said in verse 9, I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. In other words, I did this as an experiment and didn't lose my mind doing it. So some of you may like the symphony and you could go to the hall in downtown Corpus Christi and you can pay your ticket. Sit. He didn't have to do that. He assembled their own. He just went to his private place. His orchestra room, if you will, they could play a symphony or whatever music they played at the time, sing anything that he wanted sung. He had that and he could have it played for him in a private audience if he wanted. Remarkable. Remarkable. He said, I tried all that. I remember one time we were on a boat with Ann's mother on the Danube River and we were going from, I think, Dresden in Germany to Budapest in Hungary. And we were going to go to Vienna, and there were 100 people on this little boat, this river boat, and the guide was running all around frantic one day as we were getting ready to dock in Vienna. I couldn't figure out what that was all about because he was always a very placid, even-keeled sort of a fellow, but he was pretty anxious that day. It turned out that the excursion for the guest on that boat that night was to go to a performance of one of the composers in Vienna. So we're supposed to go and see this big performance. The only trouble is the company had forgotten to reserve the tickets for us. and this was supposed to be for Johann Strauss, which is supposed to be real famous in Vienna. So what he's doing is he's trying to get us someplace where we can hear the concert. And he did. We were actually in Strauss's home in the private area where he would be entertained privately by an orchestra. And they brought in musicians that weren't currently contracted that night. And they gave us a private performance in that room. That was pretty cool. That's what this guy had. Anytime he wanted. So he accumulated great possessions. So he tried that. In verse 10, he tried covetousness. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. So whatever mine eyes desired. Can you imagine that? You go to Cabela's with this? Or Macy's? Or Neiman Marcus? Is Needless Markup still in business? or I don't know. I don't know who's whatever. Amazon? I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from, listen, any joy. So he tried not only doing great works and accumulating possessions, but he tried covetousness. Whatever he saw he wanted, he took. And hey, we understand This involved women as well. How many wives? 700. And if, as if that were not enough, 300 concubines. We don't know of anybody in Israel that ever had that many. That's a lot. Okay, he tried all that. Verse 10, he says in the middle, my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. In other words, when he said, oh, I want to build something, that was a source of joy for him. Or I want to try this wine. That was a source of joy for him. Or I want to buy those peacocks or those trees. That was a source of joy. But I want to build that palace, or I want to build that house, or I want to grow these kinds of trees. And when he accomplished it, that was a source of joy for him. And he said, and this was my portion of all my labor. And I've noticed that about us as human beings. The desire accomplished is like a tree of life. In other words, when you set your mind to do something, I want to start in a business that's successful. I want to close more real estate transactions this year than I did last year. I want to build my own house. I want to buy and sail a boat or whatever it is. All of those things, once you've accomplished what you've set out to do, are satisfying. You know, I want to sell more than anybody else. I want to learn to play better than anybody else. I want to run the company. Whatever's driving people, there's a sense of satisfaction or a sense of joy in the accomplishment. It's just the way we're built. It's the way we're built. Verse 11. So now he's done all this. He's tried pleasure, wine, great works, accumulating possessions, covetousness. He gets to the end. Verse 11. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and on the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. There was no profit under the sun. Again, we're not talking about treasures at the judgment seat of Christ. Not talking about that. Not talking about influences of the devil. This is all just you and me in the world down here. And you know what he said? Vanity and vexation of spirit. There was no profit under the sun. And he's going to tell you why. But that's the conclusion. He said, I did it all. I had it all. I tried it all. And no profit. And there's some reasons. He's going to tell you why. There's no profit under the sun. What I've noticed about accumulating possessions personally is, do I like to fish? I do. And do I like to go in a fast boat? Yeah, I do. Would I like to own a fast boat? The day I buy it, probably be real happy with it, just like he did. My heart rejoiced in all my labor. First time I had to get a bill for repairing the engine, I wouldn't like it anymore. And then the insurance bill, and then the maintenance bill, and then you got to clean out the boat well. You know what it's easier to do? It's easier to pay a guide a lot of money about 12 times a year and let him deal with all that. He'll put you on fish every time, and you'll have a good time. You don't have to worry about it. You know, you buy all this and build all this, and then you got to maintain it, and you got to keep track of the employees who are running it. He said, I got me servants and maidens and servants born in my house. Do you know that's real fun when they show up, but it's not very fun when you have to dismiss them. So there's all kinds of, you know, and spiders build spider webs in their places, you know, and things get musty and there's mold and there's dirt and there's, do I need to go on? So then he said, here's what he said. This is what his conclusion was. He said this, I turned myself, verse 12, to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? You know what the king's son did, and what the king's grandson did, and the great grandson did? Same thing granddad did. Same thing dad did. Same great great granddad did. There's nothing that they can do that's different than what he had done. And this madness that he said, I turn myself to behold wisdom and madness. That's that headstrong passion and rashness in opposition to reason. It doesn't make sense that I should keep doing this, but I seem to be driven to do it anyway, is what he's saying. All right, and so he said they're going to do the same things that I have done. They're going to attempt the same. In other words, I tried it all, and I'm telling you, when I came to the end of it, there was vanity, vexation of spirit, no profit under the sun. And you know what? They're not going to take the wisdom I learned. They're going to apply themselves the same way to the same stuff, not to the same degree I did, because they won't be as rich, they won't be as wise, and they're going to find out at the end the same thing I found out. That's what they're going to find out. So he tried. So what was that good? Of all those things he tried, this is the question he's asking. What was that good for the sons of men, right, which should they should do under the heaven all the days of their life, in verse 3? You know what he said? It's not all those things I tried, because there's no profit in those. Oh, you say, yeah, but look at my balance sheet. I've accumulated so much more than what I inherited, or so much more than what I started with. That's right, and when you die, guess what? Your name won't be on the balance sheet anymore. Those assets transfer to somebody else. So he tried. So, you know, here's what he said. Then if that didn't work out, I applied myself to wisdom. So he tried wisdom. Let's see what happened there. Verse 13. Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head. He sees where he's going. But the fool walketh in darkness. He can't see where he's going. And Solomon wrote about that in Proverbs chapter 4. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this is also vanity. You know what he said? I work myself to death, get all this to see if it would satisfy me. And I get to the end of my life and there's some fool that was watching me do it the whole time and never lifted his finger to try a thing. And guess what? We both end up dying at the end of all this. That's what he learned. Same thing that happens to me happens to the fool. The same thing that happens to the fool happens to me. That must have been a real shocker to him at the end of his life. Verse 16, for there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is, in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. You know what's really funny? Generation after generation, they keep making the same mistakes of the prior generations. Our generation, the one alive today, if we were wise, would get saved after seeing the wise men of the prior generation and what they learned. They would. They'd look at what happened with the somewhat of a revival of evangelism back there in the 70s. Remember the Jesus movement and Everybody with One Way movement and the four spiritual laws and Campus Crusade for Christ and people getting saved and, you know, Jesus freaks and all that kind of stuff. They'd look at that and say, you know what? Those guys, they had something. I preach salvation at funerals and tell the story of people who many times later in life realized what Solomon realized and then came to Jesus Christ and got saved and for the first time had a lasting smile on their face. And I say to the people that are gathered at the funeral, you ought to do what this person did. And they walk out of here just as lost as they walked in. Okay, what did God do back in Noah's generation? What did he do? Flooded out the world. Started over with 8 people. And then in Sodom and Gomorrah, in Lot's generation, what did he do? He destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah with fire and brimstone. You know what Luke 17 says they're going to be doing when Jesus comes? The same thing they did in the days of Noah's flood and the same thing they did in Sodom and Gomorrah. They never learned. And that's what he's saying. He said, this is crazy what I've applied myself to because there's no remembrance in verse 16 of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. It's as if it never happened. And they just do it all again. So he said, that applied my heart to wisdom, but he said, that didn't really do it. Not down here. How many men have accumulated earthly wisdom recorded in a book and the books are gathering dust on the shelves because nobody wants to read what they wrote? People are too lazy to read today if they can't get it all in one page or on a 7-minute video on YouTube, they don't care to sit and learn it. All right, so what was that? Well, that wasn't, what was that good? Not good. You know what? Watch what happened to this poor guy. Verse 17, therefore I hated life. Wow. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Wow. After all of that he did and all that he accomplished and all that he accumulated, got to the end and said, I hate it. I hate life. Isn't that remarkable? He turned out to be a total pessimist. And why was that? What is it that really caused him to hate it? Verses 18 to 21, here's the first thing. I have to leave it to somebody else. Yea, verse 18, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun. It caused him joy while I was doing it, but once it was done, he said, I hated it, because I should leave it unto the man that should be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Well, we found out later, didn't we? He was a fool. Rehoboam is his name. Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. To despair of means to lose hope in. Just lost hope in it. Despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. In equity means he didn't take it by hook and crook. He did it fairly. Solomon accumulated what he accumulated fairly and justly and reasonably and appropriately. So there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity, yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a what? A great evil. Why would it be a great evil? I'll tell you why. When I was in the banking business many years ago there in Beeville, there was a gentleman of gentlemen that was one of our customers. Nice man, kind, well-spoken. He had no enemies in town. Everybody liked him. Great name, great reputation. I won't quote his last name, but if I were to have said it in the company of people in Beeville, people would say, oh, man, that was one of the nicest fellows in town. He worked hard. He bought a little land around his homestead. He farmed. He was a successful farmer. He didn't ever set the world on fire. He never had the best production, but he didn't have the worst production. He was just very consistent in what he did and always a gentleman and always a kind-hearted fellow. And he had a son, one son. And his son was working into the business and became the heir of it all and literally lost it all. His father was still alive as he saw his son begin to dismantle the fortune that his father had accumulated. His son loved to play golf and he loved to gamble. And he was a hothead. And so you could hear him at the golf course in Beeville. If you play golf on the country club course there, it's fairway or jail. It didn't have a rough, it had oak trees. So it was either fairway or jail. And this boy ended up in jail most of the time. And I mean, both in the trees and in the bars, both places. But you could hear him, it was only a 9-hole course, but you could hear him from the clubhouse anywhere on that course when he made a bad shot in the trees. What you would hear is thunk against the wood. And then you would hear a loud blasphemy. And then you would hear the shaft of his club as it was wrapping around the tree. And then you'd hear it break and the head would go. I know a guy that followed him when he played 18 holes on that course, picked up the head and the handle of every club he broke and ended up with a set of clubs when he had them all reshafted. Pings, I think they were. They do. They do ping. When you wrap them around a tee, they go ping. Just like that. And you know what that generation of men said about the generation that they were raising when I was in the banking business? Well, I want my children to have it better than I did. And you know what? Their children didn't have it better than they did. I can see their faces. I can name them right now. Vast fortune, good mineral incomes, and this guy blew it all in stupid ventures. This guy drank it all at Pinky's bar. That guy blew it all gambling and smashing clubs around the deal. And eventually that boy, I think, ended up, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Benny told me, ended up, got drunk one night, flipped his car, and ended up dead in the Nueces River over here. And it's like, you mean I did all this and that's the end? That's vanity and a great evil is what Solomon said. And he said the other reason that it's a great evil is this, verse 22, for what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart wherein he hath labored under the sun? All his days are sorrows and his travail, grief, yet his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity. You know what he's saying? I worked my tail off and had to deal with the grief of trying to get all this just done right, and they weren't building it right, and had to correct this and tear this wall out and put that wall up. He said it was a grief, it was sorrow, and I didn't get to rest at night. Why? Ecclesiastes 5:12. Because of this, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. Many, many sleepless nights. It just wore him out. All right? So he said, that wasn't good. So what was good? What was that good? You know what it is? He concludes this passage, and we'll look at these last three verses, 24, 25, and 26. You know what he said? What it is? Contentment. That's what he said. If you want to get it right down here, contentment is what you look for. Verse 24, there's nothing better for a man than he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. Do you understand? If you could put in a good day's work, have a nice meal, refresh yourself with something to rehydrate your body, and enjoy the good that you accomplished that day and get a good night's sleep, you are a rich man. That's what he said. One time a guy that had mediocre wealth saw a very rich man, and he said, I'm richer than you are. And the rich man said, how could that possibly be? He said, because I have all I want and you don't. That's exactly what he's saying here in 24, 25. For who can eat, or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. There's a moral comment that Solomon is making at the end of this passage, and he says, you know, if you do a good job with that, God rewards you with the blessings of wisdom, knowledge, and joy. But if you're cutting corners, you're a sinner, Solomon writes much about this in Proverbs. You're stealing, you're cheating, you're cutting corners and doing unethical things. But you gather that up, when it's all said and done, it's going to end up in the hand of those that were good. It's just a moral statement about what takes place here under the sun. Under the sun. All right, so we've come to the end of the lesson. I just want to make these comments that you know well in your Bible, but I want to end this lesson on a positive note. If you're here, we're all here today. You're here today, except for the ones that are listening on audio that weren't here. You know what we should learn from this? Just what Paul told us. He said, when you take under the sun and you add God to the equation, who is above the sun, remember that godliness with contentment is great gain. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Remember, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. All these things will be added unto you. Remember, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust doth not corrupt, where thieves do not break through and steal. Remember, set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth, and you won't be a miserable man or a miserable woman. If you leave God out of the picture, you're just wasting your time down here trying to succeed. That's what the wisest man who ever lived aside from Jesus Christ concluded after trying everything you can try. It'll leave you empty unless you put God in the equation. And you put God in the equation, it'll change everything. As long as you're doing it for His pleasure, you'll derive joy from it as well. And a good reward when you're done. Father, we're very thankful today for the opportunity to be able to learn from a wise man. And I pray we will. He said, there's no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. But today we've learned from him, and I pray we will remember because of you. We ask you to do this in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.